Hi.
Hi.
My name is Maya, and if I had to pick a weapon of my choice, it'd probably be a polearm or like a scythe of some kind. I think we've talked about
this. We have talked
maybe
about
once
this.
or twice.
I think this is our very first year. Hi, my name is Sydney, and I think my answer back then was I would not choose a weapon. It would be poison. Semantics, semantics. A weapon I would choose. For what? Fighting?
Yeah.
Okay.
That or, like, I would use my legs. Like, you know, like, beef up my legs.
Thighs,
or, like, what is it? What the fuck do they call it in Fullmetal Alchemist? Automail?
Oh, okay. Would you have your own legs chopped off?
No, but there's also, like, the world of, like, cyberpunk, where they're, like, you just, like, make enhancements to your legs. Something like that.
Right.
So, like, if I had to pick.
Right. I feel like I'm not, like, a weapons girl. We've talked about this when we talk about D&D. I'm very much a magic class user, other than weapons or fighting or anything.
Right.
But, like, maybe, like, a cute little dagger.
Okay.
Very, like, stealthily.
A cute sleigh.
Yeah, like, I'm not trying to, like, really wave anything around, you know what I mean?
That's fair.
Although I do think if we are going into, like, less magic and more zombie territory, I really enjoy, like, baseball bat with nails in
okay.
it.
Okay,
yeah.
Sleigh. Yeah, I was gonna say, like, aesthetic-wise, I really like pole arms.
Okay.
And that's why I really like scythes, too.
Yeah.
I've always loved that kind of,
like
aesthetic.
Like, really long?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's, like, very fun to watch.
Sure.
And, like, character design-wise,
sure.
I've always loved characters with pole arms.
Fuck
Donatello
yeah.
from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. When I played Genshin Impact, I played a lot of the pole arm users.
Okay.
Like, it's just a very aesthetically pleasing thing to me.
Right.
Always has been. The legs thing is just, like, I have very beefy legs. Not beefy in terms of, like, I have a lot of muscles down there. I would love to get some beefy thighs. But, like, my legs, I think, would be the main source of power that I have.
Yeah.
If anything else, if you looked at me as a person, I think most people would be like, yeah, she uses a hammer.
Okay.
Like, I feel like I would give off that kind of vibe.
Yeah, that's fair.
So.
I just feel like I'd get performance anxiety. So I'd like to be, like, discreet. And, like, maybe just, like, sneak up on someone.
Yeah.
And then just, like...
That's fair.
And just be like, oh, no, what happened?
Oh, no.
I'm gonna walk away now.
Our table! It's broken!
Just really just be like, whoops. La-da-da-da-da. Like, stroll away from the scene of the crime. Like,
right.
Nothing ever happened.
Slay. This is canonically incorrect. This is our podcast where we talk about anything and everything
fan fiction
and fandom related. Yippee! Now, Sydney is going to have no idea what I'm talking about today. Do you have any news?
I would like to talk about something kind of important that came out in the world of AI. I feel like we have spoken more about AI than we would have ever liked to on this podcast.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And today I do bring you another piece of AI news. So everyone knows that AI has to learn from other mediums. And we've reported many times before on fanfiction sites like AO3 being, writers, I guess, on AO3 being worried that their fanfiction is being used to teach AI because it's free, readily available on the internet. But there's no way to actually know if AI is using fanfiction. It's not like there's a very specific sex trope that would ever tell us how and what AI models are using to learn.
Do tell.
But oh my god, there is. And it's called the Omegaverse.
Correct.
So, if you don't know what the Omegaverse is, first of all, consider yourself lucky and blessed. You have been chosen.
Mm.
The trope began in the supernatural fandom and has now spread to almost every corner of fanfiction. These stories are defined by a specific sexual hierarchy made up of alphas, betas, and omegas, in which alphas and omegas can smell one another in particular ways, experience heat, and usually mate for life. Most of these stories are heavy on smut, and bodily fluids are crucial to the whole genre. And because the Omegaverse has such specific terms and phrases associated with it, ones that are found within fanfiction and practically nowhere else, it's an ideal way to test how generative AI systems are scraping the web. People have begun tinkering with other ways to try and explore what these models might know and how. And one way to do that is to prompt the system with words or questions you know come from a certain source. So, for example, if you want to know whether these systems are trained on fanfiction, you just give them a little model of a specific little trope unique to fandom. And a few months ago, fanfiction writer Kefethseru did just that. In a very thorough post on Reddit, they gave the writing tool Pseudowrite specific words and phrases unique to the Omegaverse. The system readily filled in the rest of it in a way that suggested that AI knew all about this particular trope. For example, when the writer plugged in the sentence, Steve had to admit that they had some reservations about how the new century handled the social balance between Alphas and Omegas into Suitiverse, it suggested the following next section. Being an Omega himself, he knew how difficult it was to find a balance between the highly competitive Alpha-Omega relationship and the Omega-Omega friendship, especially for someone like Steve, who was highly competitive and wanted to be a career officer. And the author of this Wire article that I read also tested Sudorite by writing, "The scent stopped Harry dead in his tracks. His neck tingled against his will, bringing back memories of one particular Alpha." Sudorite suggested the following. Harry's heart raced with excitement and fear as he followed the scent. He couldn't help but wonder what had happened to the Alpha since the last they saw each other. Mm-hmm. Had he found his mate? Had he forgotten about Harry? The questions swirled around his head as he approached a dark alleyway. And the only way for Sudorite would know to fill in these specific sentences is if it were to learn about the Omegaverse. And the only place for it to learn about the Omegaverse is on fanfiction sites like Archive of Our Own. Mm-hmm. James Yu, the chief technology officer at Sudorite, says his team noticed the Reddit post fairly quickly. He said that it was eye-opening because it highlighted how vast the data set that go into these models really are. He says, "For me, it highlights the things I don't know. In every one of these models is millions of other latent spaces that I just never encounter. It's almost like an endless ocean." Prior to the Reddit post, you had no idea what the Omegaverse is. Now his own system was offering tips on how to write smut about it. Writers of fanfiction were not pleased to find that their work was being used to train these systems. This is particularly concerning as many for-profit AI writing programs like Sudorite, WriteSonic, and others utilized by GPT-3. The original Redditor post wrote in an email to the Archive of Our Own communications team shared in the thread. "These AI apps take the works which we create for fun and fandom not only to gain profit, but also to one day replace human writing. And you is aware of this complaint. I'd love for there to be a simple way to do fair compensation for content that was used to train GPT-3, but unfortunately there is no mechanism that OpenAI provides for that. If someone were to offer this, we'd try it out immediately. For now, he believes that Sudorite's value to writers outweighs the harm. We're one of few AI platforms that is catering specifically to fiction writers. But that's not convincing to a lot of writers who feel their work is being used against their will to enrich technology companies." In the comments on the Reddit post, one user said, "I never liked the idea of hiding my work, but because of this, I went and restricted everything I've written so only registered users can see it." And others share tips on how to make their fan works private. That sort of takes the heart out of it. Fan fiction is used by a lot of creators to explore difficult topics that are personal to them and their life experiences as a way to vent about these topics. Even if it's just smut, just plain smut, there's a human element there, and it's someone creating something for their enjoyment, and they want to share that their hard work with people, and it's stealing that from people. This is the same argument that is currently being made by the WGA, that these systems can use copyright or copyrightable work against the author's will, and this applies to fan fiction too. It might not be done for profit, but fanfiction is eligible for copyright claims. While these writers do not own the content on which they're basing these pieces of fiction, they do own anything original they contribute through their work. Even things that are highly derivative, if they are originated with the author, are considered original, says Betsy Rosenblatt, a professor at University of Tulsa College of Law and the legal chair for the Organization of Transformative Works. But for most writers, it's not really about copyright or ownership or even money. Most fanfiction authors don't make a living doing this. They do it for the community, for the friends and connections they make. For them, it's not that they are being deprived of potential income, but instead that someone is making money off of something that they created specifically to be non-commercial. So can AI systems like Sudorite and writers who don't want to use them exist in harmony? Nobody knows, of course, but some people have been talking about some form of opting in. I would love to get to a place where we could have total opt-in mode and everyone is compensated for that, says you. I just don't think that's possible right now. And because we've had such conversations about AI and platforms like Wattpad and Archive of Our Own using AI, and then even in that article it states that, like, there are writers who are putting their works on private, pulling their works entirely. A lot of writers on platforms like AO3, and this is specific to AO3, are threatening to completely pull their stories from AR3 after the staff posted that they will not prohibit the publication of artificial intelligence-generated fanfiction on the website. Mm. This kicked off earlier this month when the nonprofit group Organization for Transformative Works posted an excerpt of an interview with Betsy Rosenblatt, who expressed enthusiasm over AI on the internet. She says, "One of the things that excites me, which is probably a bit to the side of what most people are talking about with AI and copyright, is that AIs are reading fan fiction now. She said in the interview originally published in February by the Association of Research Libraries. Fanfiction writers expressed their outrage. One stating on Twitter, "I think OTW's legal chair, Betsy Rosenblatt, needs to step down. I don't want a rep of OTW chanting happily about how great it is to train AI on fanfic." After deleting the interview excerpt and posting an apology, OTW published a blog that said staff members had to put in place, quote, "technical measures to hinder large-scale data scraping on AO3 in a bid to calm frayed tempers." However, in the same blog post, OTW staff also wrote that AO3's terms of service does not prohibit AI-generated fanfiction. It wrote, "If fans are using AI to generate fanworks, then our current position is that this is also a type of work that is within our mandate to preserve." I do think that this is the widest and possibly most controversial position AO3 has ever been in terms of AI.
Yeah.
On the platform, what it says about it, because before, Archive of Our Own has always said, like, we are taking anything and everything, it does not matter what, it does not matter, you know, who wrote it, for what reasons, what they're writing, we're letting it on the site. But now there are people who are publishing completely AI-generated fan fiction, which I can understand is a difficult position for them to be in. I think a lot of people would love to be just like, leave AI off of it. I 100% think that they do need to do something about just AI scraping fanfiction to train it, just because it's there. So I would love for the Omegaverse to be the reason that this goes to court, actually, so that the Omegaverse is in court for the second time in its entire existence.
Very cool.
I think that's very funny. If I had a nickel for every time AO3 has made it into a court of law, I'd have 2 nickels, which has not happened often, but it's strange that it's happened twice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think it's just like a very odd conversation.
Right. And the thing is like, I can understand their response of like technically, this is not like, yes, it is AI generated, but it's also posted under a user that like put in all those prompts and like that kind of stuff. But, I don't know. AI is in a territory now where it's just like, everything is gray. There is no black and white. And it sucks that we have to now live through the, like, the legality of all of it finding those fine lines.
And I do think that, like, people like fan fiction authors are in, like, a very strange spot against people who are, like, the members of the WGA who, like, they can, like, pass laws. Like, those are, like, rules they can put into place that, like, you know, nothing is going to be AI written or go through any AI editing process or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like for fan fiction authors, it's like all we have is AO3, right? That's our only line of defense. And like, if they're not going to do anything about it, it's just like, we can't unionize. What are we going to do about it? You know?
For sure.
So I can't wait to see the Omegaverse back in court again. It'll be so much fun. Can't wait to watch that court process. Thank you for your service, the Omegaverse. We will always be on your side, fighting one by one.
So, moving straight in to the fic, I guess, today. We're going to be talking, I read a fic from Ruby, which our very lovely author interview, like, from, you know, I think it was 2 months ago.
Girlie, it was 2 weeks ago.
Was it 2 weeks ago?
It was their last interview.
I thought it was two interviews ago.
Time is a circle.
Time doesn't exist.
Since
that author interview, thank you so much, because like, you reminded me that Ruby existed, and I was like, holy shit. I do, like, at least the first 4 volumes really like, so I've been slowly like getting back into it, and I forgot how much I really like the characters and stuff, so I was like, you know what? I'll read a fic for that.
Why not, you know?
It was not one of the ones that they had recommended to us, from what I know, because I only remember the one that he recommended to me. So this is not one that was recommended to me.
You literally, you heard, this is for Sydney, and it went one ear out the other.
Yep, a little bit. So this very well could be one of the other two that he recommended. I'm so sorry. My memory is like goldfish, where it's just like, oh, you're talking to me now? Very cool, thanks.
That's why you have to be like, hey, Maya, yeah?
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, what's up?
Other than that, I will just go into, like, my mind palace that's full of, like, Spider-Man, FNAF, like, all the weird lore knowledge that I have in my brain. So, yeah, I read Ruby today.
Nice.
This fic is called What I'm Trying to Say Is I Think I Love You Again.
Okay.
Again, off the top of my head, I don't think it is one of the ones that was recommended to us. It is by Explosive Sky. It came out January of 2018, It has over 29,000 words. It is a one-shot, so it's only one chapter. Over 300 comments, about 2,500 kudos, 518 bookmarks, and then over almost 32,000 hits. So this is a Blake and Yang fic. I will explain the characters to you in a moment. There is Ruby and Weiss, but that's a B story. That is not the main focus. And then the big tags to note are Past Violence, Newsroom AU, Angst, Fluff, I know! Newsroom Journalism AU! I was like, ooh, look at that!
We're digging into my past.
I know. So, the world of Ruby is basically, there's like civilizations of humans, and this is, again, I have only started rewatching volume one,
okay.
But I remember watching volume one through four, and I really liked it. So, there's, like, civilizations of humans. There's, like, this academy that these people go to, like, learn how to use weapons and train and, like, use certain, like, abilities, basically, to fight off what's called the Grim. And these are, like, monsters that are, like, slowly taking over this Earth, quote-unquote. It's not our world, but it's a world. So the main four characters, which spell out, in the school, you get your team names based off of the first initial of everyone's name. So Ruby is R-W-B-Y.
Got it.
So everyone that I mentioned in the tags is what... So R is Ruby, obviously, and they named it after her. W is Weiss. B is Blake. And Y is Yang. So that's Team Ruby.
Got it.
And that's why the show's called Ruby. Because it's about the four of them. So... Ruby is the youngest. She uses a scythe that is also a sniper rifle, which is very cool.
Rad.
She's like red coated. She's very cool. Her older sister is Yang, who's the yellow coated character. She has a robotic arm and she like fisticuffs. She's like generally overconfident about everything. They have different moms, so they're half sisters, but they are like bonded, like they love each other a lot. Weiss is the heiress to like this massive corporation, but she has a lot of family trauma because of that, so like succession type, but she's like actually a good person. She just doesn't know how to express her feelings in any way, shape, or form. And lots of people ship Ruby and Weiss together, and then lots of people ship Blake and Yang together. So Blake is the last one. Blake is a faunus, which is partial animal people. So she's part cat, so she has like ears and a tail, but she hides it most of the time because they still aren't like socially accept, like there's still a lot of like wars about it. So she was, this is important for the fic, so you kind of need to know it. She was a part of this group called, I think it's called the White Fang. They did say it in the fic, but I didn't write it in my notes. But it's basically like this radical group that does things so that like faunas will become acceptable in society. And that's not to say that they aren't, but there's still a lot of like species issues with it. So she dated the leader of the White Fang group. And then his name is Adam and he's like part axe. She broke up with him and then started going to the academy, and that's how her and Yang met. And like they share a lot of like trauma bonding in the show, and that's why a lot of people pair them up together. And she is a like purple black coated character. So the colors wise, Blake is black purple, Yang is yellow, Ruby's red, and then Weiss is like white and blue. So color wise too, like everyone kind of like works out. The show is very stylistically different from like a lot of different kinds of animation, but I think that's what the part of the appeal is. And the story is overall pretty good. I know I have, again, I haven't watched a lot of the latest volumes. I think they're still producing it. It is from Rooster Teeth, but yeah, it was one of their like big claims to fame. And then it became like, I know a Japanese studio did like an official animation of it, at least for the first season, the first volume. So that's kind of the general story sense, but this still takes place in their world, but it's as if they all work in like a newsroom and they're all like journalists together. So it is just like your Good Omens thing. It is mixed timeline wise. So you get portions that are from the past and then portions that are from the present, and it kind of like explains everything. So
I think especially since I have like real world experience of working in a
newsroom. Right. That's also why I was drawn to this one, because I was like, ooh, Sydney knows.
There is, like, so much, like, drama both internally and externally that you get from, like, the public in terms of, like, I have so many stories from, like, and I only worked in a newsroom for about 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, even during that small time, and even, I didn't even work at, like, a big publication. It was very locally.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, it was just, like, people say the craziest shit to you. The craziest people come through a newsroom. Like, there is just so much.
Right.
That happens. That, yeah. It's like, it does not surprise me that, like, something like that comes through. Even, I think, because maybe because of my, like, lived experience, I love any sort of movie involving journalistic practices. And I know a lot of movies are very, like, serious matters, like She Said and Spotlight and stuff like that.
Right.
But I think a newsroom AU should be as high as, like, a doctor.
It was very interesting to read. Like, yeah. I really liked it. I should also mention, this wasn't in the tags, but it definitely was in the fix. There is smut, and I don't talk about it because it's not, like, I mention it in passing. I'm like, mm-hmm. Oh, they fucked. It's not, like, super relevant, but it is mixed in.
Also, you should go read it then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go read it.
Wonderfully, wonderfully written fic.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not so great with the dialogue stuff in my retellings, but... wonderfully written.
Yeah.
I think the characterization's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So, please go read this fic. Like, I'm begging you not to listen to this episode, because one of my other episodes...
Hold on. We're not going to beg people not to listen to this episode. Just
go read the thing and then come back. We'll put it that way. We'll do the YouTube thing where it's like, pause this and go watch something else and then come back. So you can get Sydney's live reactions to this as I try and shittily retell it. Anyways.
I can't wait to sit here and, like, Vogue... newspaper journalists, like, you know how they have, like, an investigative reporter, like, watches these movies and tells you, like, yeah. the things that they do wrong in these movies.
It starts out in the present,
mm-hmm.
and Sun Wukong, who is newer to the team, a couple months, announces to the newsroom that he thinks he's going to ask Blake out, and everyone tells him no.
Slay!
Everyone's like, that's a bad idea. And he's like, well, why? Like, what's going on? And then we skip to the past. So he's put on pause for just a little bit. In the past, this is as Team Ruby is graduating college. So this is also a partial college AU. Weiss announces that she is going to take over her family's newspaper.
Okay.
And she's going to hire everyone. Okay. She's going to hire Ruby...
fuck yeah.
Team Ruby to be in their newsroom, mm-hmm. and, like, this is kind of, like, how it starts, but also not really. And it's, like, very, like, everyone's like, are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're giving us a job straight out of college?
Yeah, right.
Crazy. Thank you.
As a journalism major, you should know that's very difficult.
Yeah, so they're all like, thanks. So, and then back to the present now. Sun keeps asking why. He's like, why is this a bad idea? Like, I think there's something going on.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. And the general consensus is that Blake and Yang are still together, even though Yang's been gone for over a year. Mm. Hasn't been back. We learn through this conversation that she's the youngest Pulitzer Prize winner for her investigative photojournalism.
Fuck yeah.
So she's, like, she's been gone for over a year working on something very specific. So, like, the general consensus is that Blake and Yang are still together, but they're still, like, but they really aren't. But it's more confusing than that. But it's, like, but they aren't together, but, like, they definitely are. Like, you just shouldn't ask, because she'll turn you down anyways. But, like...
just stop.
They're not, but they are.
Just stop.
So, we're gonna put a pin in
that. People tell you not to do something, listen to them.
Maybe. Sort of. So, we go back to the past. And this is in college, and... Blake and Yang are meeting for the first time. They both major in investigative journalism, but Yang is getting a minor in photography,
okay.
and Blake is getting a minor in law.
Okay.
But they share the same major, so they share a lot of the same mm-hmm. classes. Blake was very dry. She had her walls up all the time, mm-hmm. didn't have a lot of friends, but, like, kind of kept to herself. Yang was overly confident, but didn't have anyone close to her. Mm-hmm. Just, like, kind of made, you know, was just kind of there.
Me in college.
Me too. So, for one of their classes, they always, like, kind of, like, talked, but not really. They intrigued each other, but never said anything, because, mm-hmm. like, they just had classes together. They weren't, like, friends outside of class. And it wasn't until one of the classes, required them to get with a partner for a project and do, like, a report on the other person to, like...
Like a feature.
Like a feature, yeah. If that's the word for it.
Is it? It
know.
Is.
Yeah, sure. I don't know anything about journalism, so I'm out of my realm this time. So immediately the two, like, go up to each other and they're like, you, you're going to be my partner.
Play.
No lying. They agree from the get-go. They're like, we aren't going to lie to each other. For some reason, you're very intriguing. Mm-hmm. We're going to do this. And Blake is the one that goes up to Yang originally and says this. And Yang's like, okay, yeah, sure. But, like, you're the one that has your walls up. So, like, you're the one that's going to, you know, mm-hmm. have to make that promise.
Yeah.
And Blake was like, what makes you say that? Like, how could you tell? And Yang's just like, listen, I just know. Like, her intuition, crazy. Right. She just knows. And so... through this conversation, Blake startles Yang and asks her out on a date Friday night. And that's how they'll start this assignment. And Yang is like, for the assignment, right? Not because you like me or anything. Blake's like, no, I do. Is 8 okay? Yeah, 8's great. And then they part ways and don't see each other until Friday. Back to the present, Sun keeps pushing. He's like, I don't understand. And again, keeps getting like vague responses. This is where we learn that Blake and Yang were dating up until a year ago, and it's still obvious that there's feelings, mm-hmm. but Yang's been gone, and Blake's been here, right. working in the newsroom, so it's just kind of like...
So I'm confused. Okay. Is Sun gonna ask Yang out when she gets back?
No, he wants to ask Blake out.
Wants to ask Blake out! JK.
Who works actively in the newsroom, and we also learn later in the fic... that Blake was the reason he got this job. She was the one that was like, hey, I really like his work. Hire him.
Okay.
So, like, he's just like, yeah, I think that there's something.
Okay.
And everyone's like, no, don't. How about you stop doing that?
Okay, I got confused there.
You're fine. And then one of the coworkers is like, dude, Yang is going to kill you if she finds out that you asked out Blake. Because of what they went through, like, you should just not be asking.
Yeah.
And Sun's like, I don't know what the fuck that means, but okay. And then he, like, starts to let it go. But he's like, what is that? Mm-hmm. You meet, like, what did they go through?
Right.
But they aren't together. They haven't seen each other in over a year.
For a newsroom, you all have a lot of less facts than I need.
We're getting there! So, back in the past, they're on their date, and they, like, start to get to know each other. They have this very flirty relationship where it's like, well, you know, if you order a steak on the first date, it means you want to go on a second one.
Damn. Yeah, like, I didn't know that rule.
No, they're making up rules and stuff, and it's like, well, if I order the salad, does that mean I hate you? Yeah. I'll have the steak fries. So it's like, they have this, like, weird back and forth. Not weird, it's cute. And Yang starts rattling off things that, just based off of her intuition, is just like, you have past relationship trauma, mm-hmm. like, probably with a boyfriend, considering neither of us have been with a girl before, like, never dated a girl before, that kind of thing. And it then reveals that, like, Yang has hardly been in any relationships her entire life. Mm-hmm. Like, she has spent a majority of her life raising her sister.
Right.
And, like, that's where most of her time was spent. And so Blake makes that assumption and is correct. So they slowly start to get to know one another. Back in the present, Blake shows up at the office, and Weiss pulls her into her office and is like, wants to talk real quick. And Sun is like, what's going on? He keeps pushing. And again, no one's really answering anything about Yang. They're just like, drop it. Mm-hmm. Just fucking stop talking about it. And while Blake and Weiss depart and Blake goes back to her office, there aren't a lot of office spaces, like, actual, mm-hmm. like, closed-off offices. You know, most people just work at a cubicle of some kind. But the only two people that have offices are Weiss, who owns the newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
She gets her own office. Mm-hmm. And then the other room belongs to Blake and Yang, because they're both the investigative journalists.
Yeah,
they're a team. So they share that space. So Blake goes back into her office.
Also, the Pulitzer Prize winner absolutely gets an office.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So Blake goes back into her office, starts working, and Sun is still kind of like,
yeah.
And then a blur of yellow runs across the office, and everyone is like, what the f- huh? Who else could it be but Yang returning?
Uh-huh.
And this is after Weiss had just told Blake, hey, Yang's gonna be gone a little longer than we thought. So Yang runs in to their office and immediately hugs Blake. There's also, as they hug, it's very hard for Blake because this is the first time that she's seen Yang's metal arm. Oh, so okay. We learn that there has been some sort of incident.
Right.
And
she may be like a war reporter too.
We do learn that the reason that she was gone for a year was to report on a war. So this is the first time that she's seen the metal arm and is like, it's a lot. And there's obviously some tension between the two. We don't know what's going on. There's crying, but they're behind in an office in a closed space. And everyone's just kind of like, we didn't think that this would be happening today. We should have run drills. What's going on? And they kind of talk and then they kind of don't. And Yang says that she missed Blake. And Blake says, but wasn't I the reason you left? Yeah. It's a very uncomfortable conversation because there's obviously still feelings attached, but we don't know exactly what's happened. We are Sun and we are looking in and we're trying to figure out, like, no one can really hear them talk, but the body language is evident that, like, there's still something, but not really. And Blake asks if Yang will be coming home. She says that there's a lot she wants to talk about and a lot she wants to say, and Yang says yes, but she still has work to do and photos to develop, so she goes to the dark room and Blake follows her. They don't talk at all while this is happening, and it's very claustrophobic, and eventually Yang gets to a point where she's like, I need a break. And Blake is like, you're not gonna leave, you're not leaving, right? And she's just like, no. And she just dips into Weiss's office and like sits down, and Weiss is there and it's like, what's wrong? Yang can't understand why leaving for so long didn't help in letting Blake go, and Weiss is just straight up and is like, you're both still fucked up. You're both fucked up in the head. She left you alone, and then you left her before she could say anything. So you both have been alone for a long time because both of you refused to communicate a little bit. So, yeah, there's a lot built up. It's been over a year. But, yeah, she's like, you're both still pretty fucked up in the head. It's a very, even though it's been over a year, that's a wound that's been developing, reopening, growing over the past year. So just try and understand, like, you know, like, it's okay. Things will be okay. Like, take your time. Yang gets angry at this because she doesn't want to want Blake anymore at all. She wanted this year to be feelings detached, no more, no less. Can't do it anymore. And Weiss is trying her best to explain that, hey, Blake is going through her redemption arc because having her ex cut off your arm kind of fucked up.
Hold on.
At the same time, when Weiss is trying to have this conversation with Yang, it cuts to their relationship in college. And they're always calling or texting each other, being around each other, constantly, you know, like having sex all the time, you know, just like having a great relationship as compared to now when it's icky, not so great. So even though Yang gets very angry at Weiss, she still leaves the office and follows Blake all the way back to their apartment. And it's the first time that Yang fully breaks down in like a very long time, walking into their house, their apartment, and seeing that nothing has changed. All of the pictures, exactly the same. The couches, exactly the same. All of the dishware, exactly the same. Nothing has dust on it. Everything has been cleaned. It's been lived in. Blake has been here by herself, living in this.
I mean, yeah, what did you expect? Like,
right, but she thought that maybe Blake had perhaps moved on as well, and it would have been easier. But it's not. It's not. And Yang starts to feel like the walls are closing in, that the pictures are looking her in the face, and she can't, like, she can't focus on any of it, and she just starts to cry, and it feels bad. Like, awful. And Blake is there, and she tries to console her and, you know, cries with her because it's kind of a lot for someone to, like that to go through. And Yang just wants to know why Blake left. That's the only question that she really wants answered. Because I love you. You don't run from people you love. you don't run from people you love. And that's the end of that conversation. So we skip to the past, and the first time they realized they were in love with each other was when they were writing the final paper for this partner project. It had been a semester-long thing, and Yang had given it to Ruby to be like, hey, proof this, make sure that it's, like, good. And she sits there and she watches Ruby read through it, and Ruby finishes it and is like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. This is so good. You know you're in love with her, right? Like, that's what this is giving. And she's like, holy fuck.
When everyone else my around God. You know that you're in love
with her. She's like, oh my, you're so right. She immediately texts Blake and is like, I'm on my way over to your house. Open the door, please. And, like, as soon as she enters the apartment, she's like, I'm in love with you. You know that, right? And Blake is like, you want to know what's fucking hilarious? I gave this to my best friend, and she said the exact same shit. And I just wasn't going to say it until I saw you next. And so, like, they would go through the exact same thing. And it's so hard for them to, like, not hard, but, like, it was hard for them to realize it. And then immediately having someone else be like, hey, you know this is not how normal, like normal friends or, like, fuck buddies, like, talk to each other.
This is not, like, an unbiased piece you wrote.
Yeah, like...
They're like, this is actually very flowery and almost a little too sentimental. You're
obviously in love with this person.
This is almost like a speech that you wrote out.
Great, but weird. Why am I reading it?
Yeah. I feel like I'm intruding on something, actually.
Should I be reading this? A+. Anyways, skipping to the present once again, it's night now. Yang is sleeping on the pull-out bed in the living room because she just feels like she can't. And Blake comes out after some time and sits on one side of the pull-out bed, and they talk a little bit. And they talk about how they hate being alone, how it's been so long, how they've been alone for so long. They don't like it. They don't like how this feels and how it feels like haunting almost to like have another person in the space now. And Yang admits that she would rather feel nothing than feel what she's going through right now.
Yo.
And Blake knows that even if her wish was granted, she could feel nothing. There's still a part of Blake that will always live inside of Yang. And so therefore, there can never be nothing. Mm-hmm. They are intertwined in each other's lives. There's nothing that will stop that. They embrace. They hug each other. They fall over in the bed. And Blake, crying, begs Yang to kiss her, and she tells her no.
No.
This goes on for some time, and then we cut to the next morning where the two lie in bed naked with each other.
A choice that has been made. A choice. After being denied a kiss.
Yeah. Blake is the first to wake up, but Yang is just staring at the ceiling, and Blake asks if it was a mistake. Yang does not answer. Blake goes to shower, and Yang leaves the apartment. Back at the office, Yang is obviously there before Blake, and Blake walks in and, you know, says hi to everyone and stops at Sun's desk and is, like, talking to him and, like, you know, like, being nice, being a normal person. And Yang still has this guttural feeling of, like, what is it?
Yeah, like being territorial.
Yeah, territorial. Yeah. I couldn't think of the fucking word, idiot.
Territorialism.
Something like that. I don't know. So she just feels, like, very possessive. That's the word that I was looking for.
Sure.
Very possessive over Blake still. And as Blake walks into their shared office, Yang is like, nice. Mm-hmm. And Blake can tell immediately on her face. She's like, what do you want to know? What's your relationship like with that guy? He's not you. Okay, that's not what I was asking. It is what you were asking. It is. The end of that conversation.
I would throw up. I would throw up too.
Again, a little bit more time. Not more time. That continues. It's not just like silence after that. And it grows into an argument. And again, Yang asks why Blake left. That's like the only thing she wants to know. Because I love you. That's not true. This isn't a difference in opinion. It's objective. See, you're lying again. And Yang leaves. Again, everyone in the office can, like, see behind glass that this is happening, and they're like, I don't know what's going on. I don't like it, though. Sun watches it addictively because he, again, really doesn't know, like, what the situation is between them. So he's like, what the fuck is going on?
It's like a car crash. You just can't look away from it. It's
And then,
it's, like, awful to watch, but you just cannot look away.
Yeah. So then he gets a message from one of the office mates, and it's them fully explaining what the situation is between Blake and Yang. So attached to it is the photo, the Pulitzer Prize winning photo that Yang had taken. Mm-hmm. And it is a photo of Yang actively getting her arm chopped off by Adam, which is Blake's ex. And in the lower left corner of this photo, you can actually see Blake being pinned down by members of the White Fang and forcing her to watch this happen.
Never in a million years would I expect you to say that exact sentence to
me. So
what the fuck?
Yeah, the message explains what exactly is going on and what led up to this event. The two were working undercover for roughly about 6 months.
Okay.
And going into this, like, radical group and, like, trying to learn what they were doing, mm-hmm. what it was about, that kind of thing. In the camp that they were staying in, Adam made a surprise appearance. They did not know that he was showing up.
Okay.
And obviously they were exposed because he knew exactly what Blake looked like.
Yeah.
There was no hiding that. And he immediately threatened both of them because Blake had left him. That kind of thing left the group. And it is a very, like, radical terrorist group. And so he threatened that he was eventually going to kill the two of them, the both of them.
Uh-huh.
But the option that they had right now in this moment were either Yang watch Blake get tortured by him, or Blake watch Yang get dismembered limb by limb. Emergency services had already been contacted.
Yeah.
They were smart enough that they knew as soon as Adam pulled up, they were like, 911, hello.
Oh, for sure. You don't go undercover without sort of emergency protocol.
Yeah, so they hit, like, the button.
Yeah. Big red button.
They were like, go. And so Yang, knowing that it was only a matter of time before people showed up, knew that dismemberment took precision, torture did not.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to keep time going for as long as possible, she offered herself up, and the members of the White Fang pinned Blake down and made her watch as Adam cleaved off her arm. Yang had set up several, like, cameras around and triggered them as soon as it happened,
got it.
And that's how she got the photo, which was like the
weirdly
enough,
selfie.
I know, weirdly enough, that was my first thought too. I was like, how the fuck did she get this photo?
She's literally someone's camera. She's like, it'd be a really great photo actually right now. So
photo
just like,
up.
let me just actually, can you just wait a moment for me to just set this up and, like, put a little timer on? And
so like, there was already, it was already all set up and everything.
Yeah.
She just happened to get it at the exact right moment, and this is the photo that won her the Pulitzer Prize.
Well, thank God, because what, you got something out of this, babe. Thank God.
Right.
Also, how do you look at that photo and just be like, no, we're not giving her the
Pulitzer,
actually?
The girl lost her arm.
I mean,
to, like, save the love of her life against her ex.
Right.
Like, sorry, that's a lot of emotional baggage.
There's, like, a really big, there's, like, a very large background.
So, while Sun is, like, reading this message, the bickering is still continuing in the office. And it grows to a point where it's no longer them just reading body language. They can actively hear what they're, like, shouting about.
Sick. Surprised HR has not been called. Like, not, not a security guard to break them up. Like,
no. Blake actively blames herself for what happened.
Mm.
And
because
if I were,
it was Adam who,
because it was her ex, it,
yeah.
because, like, it was her, it was, I don't even know what it's called, not mission, but, like,
her assignment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, or not basically, that is what
yeah.
it is. And Yang was just, like, there to, like, help her. Mm-hmm. Like, they were working on it together, but it was Blake's assignment. So she blames herself because it should have, like, been her body over Yang's,
right.
and Yang yells back that she much rather would have lost an arm than lost Blake altogether.
Mm.
And, like, that was her choice. So
right.
she was like, I don't know. The two separate. Blake runs off to the bathroom. And Yang just goes off to, like, cry somewhere and they both like cry separate.
If you haven't cried in like some storage room, there's like specific...
If you have not cried in an office space,
an empty office space just full of boxes.
Let me tell you.
There's a couple of places. If you've never cried in like a walk-in freezer of any restaurant, if you've never cried in some storage room or an office turned into storage room in an office space,
yeah,
you're not living. You know? Like, you have not worked that
honestly,
job.
Honestly, top 10 places to be clinically depressed. It is disgusting how accurate that is. With this happening, the rest of the newsroom kind of band together and they're like, we need to fix this.
Well, yeah.
We need to remedy this. This is not okay. They obviously still have feelings for each other, but like, it's just, their point of views aren't like...
Even just the fact of, like, we can't have them screaming at each other every single day.
Right, 100%. So, a little bit of time passes, and then Yang goes to find Blake, and without hesitation, just starts kissing her, and they start apologizing to each other. It's a very touchy relationship.
They really have an up-and-down relationship, huh?
Yeah. Like, they both are apologizing to each other for not protecting one another, and then the other tells the other not to apologize, and it's like this back and forth, back and forth, and overall they just wish none of it had happened.
Sure.
But there's no fixing that now. Like, it happened and this is what they live with. Separating once more, Weiss pulls Yang and talks to her and is like, listen, the yelling
is a lot.
It kind of needs to stop. But, like, I want to understand, like...
You're disturbing the rest of the reporters.
Like, you also have to understand that, like, as much as you have nightmares about it, Blake has nightmares about it.
Right.
You guys gotta, like, try for me, please. Yeah. Please. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you! I'm trying to run a newspaper here.
Right.
And yes, it can be loud in a newsroom sometimes, but it should not be.
I'm really trying my best to be your friend, your family, but also your boss.
Please stop having marital disputes in the newsroom.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
That night, Yang goes back home with Blake, and the cycle repeats.
Man. At what point do you give up, you know?
Well, a week passes.
Okay.
And the cycle has still been repeating, but everyone is like, as the days go by, it gets, you know, worse and worse and worse, and it like keeps repeating, and then they finally have their plan and they're like, we got this, we're gonna do this. So the next Monday rolls around and the advice column gets published for this particular newspaper, and Blake and Yang read it and are immediately pissed the fuck off because someone's asking advice about being broken up for almost a year and having gone through something traumatic and not talking about it. And how would you deal with that? Thanks.
And heart, like, heart, kiss, kiss.
Yeah. And like the response that the two journalists in the room, like those were the people that were getting yelled the fuck out. Like, they were getting cussed out by Blake and Yang because it was just like, you have to get over your differences about the situation and understand that you still love each other and you can work through it. That was basically the gist of the article, or the
advice column.
Yeah, the column. I was really and they were like, who the fuck? Who wrote it? Forward us the email. We're gonna find out which one of you fuckers put this in. 100, like, we're not joking. One of you is gonna die because of what you did today. And the plan works. The plan is working. Yummy, yummy, yummy. Because the plan was just to have them
screaming at other people.
Have a common goal. Have a common enemy. Yeah. Have them work on something. Uh-huh. Investigate something together. And like work it out.
For sure.
Try their best.
And now the whole newsroom is their enemy.
Yeah, but they're like, they can't point finger. Like, they need to find the one person.
Absolutely.
Well,
I can't wait for it to be just like a, I am Spartacus. No, I am Spartacus.
Right.
It's actually been the whole newsroom this whole time.
And they get almost to figuring out who it is. Like, they're this close, and then they fall back into their old ways of just, like, not old bad, but, like, old pre...
Okay.
Pre-photo, where it's like, oh, this makes me really tired. We should go get dinner. Oh, at this place? Yeah, like... I already know what you're gonna get. Like, I'll just order it for you. I'll be there 30 minutes early, so just, like, you know, show up and it'll be ready. And it stops them both in their tracks, and they're like, internally, they're like, this is nice. I missed this.
Well, yeah.
No shit. Yang is the first to talk after this silence and is like, I'm sorry for publishing the photo. Mm. I never really thought about what it would do to you. Mm-hmm. I just knew that it had to be published, mm-hmm. and I did it without thinking. And Blake takes it in, doesn't say anything verbally.
Right.
And then, like, a light bulb goes off in her head, and she's like, I know exactly who put the thing in the column. I know exactly who it is. Yeah. They figure out that it's Weiss. Weiss was the one who called in a personal favor from someone, and, like, they connected all of the dots. So they go, and Weiss just fucking, like, rips into them. Is like, you guys need to fucking... Okay, great. You figured it out. It took you 2 weeks instead of one, which is disappointing because you guys were so good back in your heyday. So, like, get your shit together. But also, like, if you really read the column, the advice, and took it in like you were supposed to, you wouldn't be yelling at me right now. Mm-hmm. You two would be, like, kissing and making up somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So, like, go to your office and fucking talk it out.
Yeah. And honestly, so smart of them, because, like, are they really gonna yell at the boss?
Real.
Like, really?
100%. Like... No. And the boss is dating Yang's younger sister. So Weiss and Ruby are dating, so it's, like, they're all connected, so yeah. It's, like, go to your room and talk.
Go to your room! And sit there till you figured it out.
Right. So... They go into seclusion and they start hashing it out. And mm-hmm. I did not write all of this out. I literally took screenshots of the fic and just, like, highlighted the dialogue mm-hmm. because it was very well written and I don't think I could do much better. So I'm going to read it verbatim. Try my best. Okay. I'm going to try and pull a Sydney. Here we go. So it starts out with Blake and she says, do you want me or do you want me to move on? Mm-hmm. I'm in love with you. I'll love you for the rest of my fucking life, Yang. But I can't make you love me again. What do you mean, love you again? Quote unquote. I heard you that day. You told Weiss that you aren't over me, but you don't love me anymore. So I'm asking, what do you want from me? And this was the first day, this is a recall back to the first day that Yang had come back. And when Weiss had pulled her into the office, when Yang was, like, crying, Yang, in a fit of, like, anger, was like, I don't love Blake anymore. And that's what Blake is talking about. Just as a side note, sorry to break it. And Yang looks back at her after asking, what do you want from me? And Yang says, I don't know. I get I don't deserve you, Blake says, but I won't find someone new. I won't move on. But if that's what you want, I won't stand in your way. What do you mean you don't deserve me? You dumped me, remember? You're the one that left after everything that happened. I know. I literally never stopped fucking thinking about it. And when I was gone, you were still all I thought about. I wanted to get over you, Yang says. I wanted to. You blame me for what happened, don't you? That's never been true. I blame me for what happened to you. Well, stop. I made my own decisions. I'll do it again. For you, all of it. You're looking at me with, like, the saddest fucking eyes ever. Whoa. You okay?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm happy for you.
You're doing a great job, sweetie.
Thank you. So Blake is now responding. I wasn't worth it. Look, whatever the fuck you think about, I wasn't worth it. My fucked up past, my stupid fucking mistakes, they weren't yours to pay for, and I'll never forgive myself for them. I don't care. You were worth it to me. You always were worth it to me. Even more so than my fucking arm. Some of this is mine, Blake. Some of this belongs to me. I wish you would let it. I can't. Because then I have to admit, I did everything wrong and I hurt you worse. You, the one person I'd never want to hurt in this world. And none of it amounted to anything. It did amount to something. You did hurt me worse than if you stayed, Blake. That's true. But the work you did when you were gone can't be overlooked or dismissed. Your exposure of the White Fang's plans for a coup was invaluable. You literally stopped Adam from rising to power. I did it for you. Everything has been for you. I wanted to take Adam down, but more than that, I wanted to show the world what you'd truly gone up for against for the truth. For you. You said you weren't over me, but you told Weiss that you don't love me anymore. Is that true? Fuck you, Blake. You don't get to do this to me again. You don't get to love me only when it's convenient for you. I'm not. I left. It didn't mean I stopped loving you. as if it were ever even an option. Yang gets so fucking angry. She gets unbelievably pissed that she just kisses Blake. Your whole situation over here is making me laugh. I saw you do that and I was like trying so hard not to break. Sydney put her hand over her mouth and like in like shock.
Trying to be as quiet as he possibly can.
Yeah. So they kiss, and they do kiss for quite a long time. And it's hard to feel like it's okay to love someone like this again. Blake keeps apologizing and just says that like she loves her, will never stop loving her, and Yang finally understands that even though it wasn't her definition of love, that it is still something that's worth fighting for. And Yang is just scared that Blake is going to leave her again. When Yang had woken up from getting her arm cut off in that hospital, Blake wasn't there. Mm. When she went home, Blake wasn't there. Blake left. That's what she's scared of. That someone that she loves so deeply would just up and leave her like that. And in reverse, Yang left to go on this assignment mm-hmm. before Blake could get back and say anything she wanted to. And Blake regrets it. Holy regrets not saying anything. And she realizes the error of her ways and tells Yang this and says that she'll never leave again and that she regrets everything she did and she's learned from her mistakes and she will be better. And Yang admits that she still loves her and wants to try it again. So they agree that there's no more running, there's no more lying, and that they will work it out. And then a few months later, Blake shows up to the office with a ring on her finger.
Yippee! Mazel tov!
Yippee!
Wow. Man, that was so stressful.
Whoa.
That was just like...
Yeah?
It was so stressful. That's all I can say. That's like... I know that's like a very extreme side of like... journalism, like going undercover, being very right, because
even the photos that Yang was developing upon coming back mm-hmm. were of like a war-torn yeah. countryside, so even after having her arm ripped off and going through all of this right. she had to like go and watch other people's loved ones be right. taken from them, which was a whole other thing that I kind of didn't get into,
but still just like God, fuck.
Right,
but yeah, like I think at the beginning, not at the beginning, like, towards the middle, where I kind of felt, like, Weiss, and maybe didn't like Blake as much, where I was just, like, really on Yang's side of, like, this happened to Yang, and I understand that you think, but, like, you need to be there for that person. And I know that partially is because of that's how, I feel as a person, mm-hmm. that, like, I'm not really one to run away. I don't think mm-hmm. that's who I am as a person, so it's very hard for me to understand the just running away aspect of, like, all of it.
Right.
But even like, the dialogue that you had pulled and, like, really trying to think about their experience of just, like... yeah, it must have been very difficult to see, like, have that picture published and be maybe really mad at Yang, because that's a thing that you have to relive over and over again instead right. of just have that picture just, like, rot away in, like, a box somewhere, right? Because mm-hmm. I believe that a picture like that, if in the real world, would be a picture that is constantly used, like, as a reminder of, like...
radicalism. Yeah. You know, like, just, like...
the violence that comes from the actions of people right. of such. And to be able to have to relive that every single time. And also, journalists are just fucking awful at their emotions. And that's even to say for the time that I spent in there, where it was just, like... yeah, you do a lot of things, especially news writers, maybe not so much if you're in, like, an entertainment mm-hmm. realm, you know? Right. But, like, news, it's literally just, like, you beat yourself up every single day looking at the worst possible things to the fact that you're just, like, void on the inside mm-hmm. and just, like, not a functioning human anymore, but, like, also nothing makes you feel alive more than, like, that, like, doing that sort of work.
Right.
And so having that amplified by like a million, and then having a picture like that live
yeah
in not only your own conscious yeah. but like in the conscious of literally everybody in the entire world.
Yeah, I think emotionally this fic was astounding.
Yeah.
Because I didn't talk a lot about, like, their past.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, as the story continues, it shows less and less because you've kind of, like, read all of it. But they did have, like, a very loving, caring relationship.
I bet.
It, like, nothing bad happened.
Yeah.
No fights or anything. There was also a lot more, like, side character interaction, like, with the newsroom people between Weiss and Ruby. And then it was revealed in a flashback that, like, the one who proofread Blake's paper was Weiss. Like, they were friends beforehand.
Yeah.
So, like, it was all connected to begin with. And I think a lot of, like, what you were saying with Weiss talking to Yang, it was because Weiss was there for Blake.
Yes.
The entire year that Yang was gone. And Weiss was just trying to be like, I know the other side of it, and I'm trying to understand your side, and, like, it's valid, but that still doesn't deter from someone else's truth. Yeah. So, like,
yeah, at one point, I was just, like, Team Weiss all the way. I literally don't even... I'm Team Weiss. I'm just, like, please. Like, the fact that, like, not... They didn't even get like, a leave of absence because of their actions is literally just, like, oh, yeah, this is literature. Because there was no way in hell that, like, they wouldn't have not at least gotten, like, a leave of absence for the way that they're acting. In the way that, like, you were disturbing the entire newsroom. No work can be done in the slightest.
Right.
But, yeah, I definitely at one point was just like, what is going on here? And the more that, like, you get into it and, like, the more information that you get, it's just like, oh, I can't, maybe just talk, you know? I know that you're not, that's why you take photos, but maybe just talk, you know, words. We're figuring it out here. But yeah, it's I'm glad, so glad for the ending. Thank you so much for very I only live with happy endings. That's the only way that I live in life. Because it's,
I know you're like that.
Yeah. I could easily even see that situation of, like, if not for maybe Blake staying put and, like, not moving apartments or hell, even getting, like, a new job, right? Because it's been, like, a year. Like, asking someone to wait that long is, like, crazy. Especially if you're just like, oh, well, I up and left and then they up and left. It's over. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah, it was clear that there was a lot of love there, but, like, a lot of complicated and confusing love of even maybe just, like, do I deserve to love this person anymore because I got them so hurt, like, the worst amount of hurt possible. So now do I even deserve to be able to love them, you know?
Yeah. It was, it was tough a little bit to read.
Yeah.
Like, I had to read it in, like, portions throughout my day today, just because I was like,
Tummy hurt.
And even then, like, I knew the characters and everything beforehand, so, like, I vaguely knew this wasn't exactly how, like, it happened in the story, but, like, based on what I know from the characters and, like, how they were setting up the story, I was like, I think we know how Yang loves her. My bad. Yeah, it was very good.
Yeah.
I like these characters so much. Just, like, in almost any setting.
Yeah.
I really like these characters. So, monumental slay.
Slay. Love. Love so much. Thank you for bringing me Ruby fanfiction.
Yippee.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Canonically Incorrect. You can follow us on Twitter and TikTok and Instagram and Tumblr. You can send us your fanfiction recommendations, or if you're a fanfiction author that would like to be on our show, email us at canonicallyincorrectpod@gmail.com. If you would like to support us, you can donate a one-time donation at ko-fi.com/canonicallyincorrect. You can subscribe to our Patreon monthly at patreon.com/canonicallyincorrect. Thank you to our Patreons, Autumnal River and Riley C, for your continued support.
Donate to AO3!
And we'll see you guys next time!
Bye! Bye.